Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register and I play Laura on The Walking Dead. You're listening to the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, this is Ross Marquand and you're listening to the Walking Dead Talk Through.
Awesome.
Hey, this is Nick Stahl, and you're listening to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through.
Cool.
Hey survivors, welcome to episode 87 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Kyle.
I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
So we will be covering Fear the Walking Dead Season 7 Episode 4 titled Breathe With Me and some coverage of The Walking Dead World Beyond Season 2 Episode 6, Who Are You? But first, we do have some feedback from our last podcast, Fear the Walking Dead Season 7 Episode 3 titled Cindy Hawkins and some World Beyond Season 2 Episode 5 of Quatrevoss. But first, we did have some errata. I guess, Brian, you wanted to add something about last episode?
Just something I forgot to mention. We saw that one doctor or professor, his name's Terry, and that would be none other than Dr. T. Brooks Ellis, who Eugene mentions in Season 5, Episode 5, Self-Help. The doctor at the is it the Human Genome Project that liked his mullet?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We mentioned that the first time we saw Dr. T. Brooks Ellis.
Did we? Okay.
We did.
That's an errata about the errata.
Well, hey, it's good to mention it again. Twice. Make sure everybody knows.
Because we had to say something about Dr. T. Brooks Ellis, famous geneticist from the Human Genome Project, who liked my mullet.
Said I was a stand-up guy.
Yep.
That's right.
All right. Well, then let's go into our first voicemail for about last week's episode, and that comes from Megan from Pennsylvania.
Hi there. This is Megan Lehman in Pennsylvania. I had a follow-up to last week's podcast episode covering the John Dory Sr. and June in the Bunker episode, which I really, really liked, by the way. But I know that's controversial. I just wondered later, after listening to your podcast, wouldn't there be some kind of air exchange that was necessary to live in a bunker for months? I have no idea how those things are constructed, but any building or subway tunnels or any place that you're in a confined space has to have air exchange. And so I just wondered, would that introduce radiation into the bunker? How does that work? Would they be breathing stale air over time and it gets deoxygenated if they don't have air exchanging, or is there enough air in there to last? I just don't know. I was really curious to hear what you guys had to say about that, especially LT with his vast stores of survivalist knowledge. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Megan, for your voicemail. Actually, there was some... there was a scene at the beginning, wasn't there, that... they were changing out like some kind of almost like a homemade filter, or you know, they had something that had like a red cloth on it that they did show in the beginning. So they were doing some kind of, you know, filtering, but whether or not, you know, like, yeah, that's kind of part of the, you know, was any of the contaminants coming in, or, you know, was that, you know, I don't know if that was a homemade filter or they had a filter and they were just, you know, using some.
Yeah, I imagine your standard air conditioner filter wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Well,
no.
Actually, it would work a little bit, because the biggest thing you're trying to get is just particulates out of the air.
Yeah, I was about to change my answer there a little bit, because I know one of the
I was going to say the big thing is we know that they had a back door, so yeah. I would assume that the back door could be where your ventilator is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because radioactive dust would be one of the things that they'd have to worry about, correct?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So any filter that could filter out the, you know, or stop the radioactive dust from entering the, you know, area, the, you know, the bunker would be effective. But yes, there would have to be some kind of air exchange, or else, yes, you would, you know, the air would go stale.
And not just the CO2, it's the fact that it would be just noxious person funk and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you could have, you know, you could have some sort of like a U-shaped pipe that came up out of the ground, and basically just have, since they've got batteries, they could have some sort of fan that would, you know, draw air in through that. And if they had a pre-filter in the early, in the section that's closest to the surface, as long as it didn't get so clogged up that they couldn't get anything out, the filter they were probably messing with was the, you know, the secondary or post filter that you catch the big hunky chunks on the, you know, the inlet side, and then just have something that you could clean that would catch anything that strayed through the primary filter.
Yeah. Yeah, they had something. I mean, they did show it at least. So it just, and Teddy, obviously, if he was using this place, he had that place pretty stocked. So I'm sure that would have been one of the things that he would be.
Oh, yeah.
You know, utilizing, since he was planning on setting off these bombs.
and if he had hunkered down there for any length of time, then yeah, he would have to have some kind of ventilation system.
Yep. Cool. Thank you, Megan, for your voicemail. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we actually got a voicemail from Renee this week, so I will go ahead and play that.
Hi, guys. This is Renee from Atlanta. I'm calling in about Fear the Walking Dead. And I just want to let you know that I listened to you guys, of course, when I was at the gym today. And, Brian, I agree with you about June. She's a manipulator. She always has been. And she just told outright tale. That's what she does to me. I mean, June is not one of my favorite characters. She never has been. I've never really cared for her like that. And Dieta, she asked about, I saw on the Facebook page, she asked about Army of the Dead. Girl, do not waste your time. Seriously, that movie was so freaking corny to me. Like, I guess I don't like zombie movies that are corny like that. That movie was just awful. I mean, even Amari Hardwick with his good looking self could not save the movie. That's how awful it was to me. But hey, just, you can watch it and see for yourself. It was not good at all. And I definitely do not agree with Aaron from the internet, nor do I agree with you, Dieta, about Morgan. I love Morgan. I mean, I feel like Morgan is, he's fickle. He's like Carol. You know, one minute, you know, he flip-flops. One minute he's, oh, I shouldn't have killed all these people. I'm a savior. I shouldn't have did this. You know, why did I do this? Blah, 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 blah. Like Carol, he flip-flops. But Morgan, to me, he's a good person. I just feel like the storyline that they're writing for him, along with the rest of the crew, is just awful. But Morgan, to me, he makes the show. I love Morgan. I'm a diehard Morgan fan. Morgan, he's wonderful to me. It's the storyline. It's what they're writing for him. Morgan could be, this storyline between him and Fran could be just, I mean, it could be epic. It really could. It really could be epic. This is The Walking Dead's fault. They are choosing to write, Morgan as if someone who's always back and forth. Like Carol, to me, they are similar. They are so much alike. One minute they're, warriors, they'll kill anybody for their family or their team, and then the next minute, oh, why did I do this and why did I do that? But no, I don't agree with you guys about Morgan. Morgan, I love Morgan. Just wanted to call in and say that. You know, I like calling in, so I'm going to always call in every week. And I'm not going to tell y'all, I'm not going to say anything about my feedback, because my feedback to me was different than what I wrote on the Facebook, and you all did not read it. So to me, it was different. So I'm not going to say anything about this episode. I'm going to let you read my feedback. Okay. All righty. Talk to you guys later. Love you. Bye.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
I did remember I was listening to your voicemail earlier in the day, but I was thought that it looked pretty similar or sounded similar to what you had already written. So I'm sorry if I missed it.
I blame Kyle.
Yeah, it's like I should have caught more. No, go ahead. I mean, I'm sorry. You know, I'll definitely do a better job.
No, well, you made the call.
And I'm sure that if there were some points in there that were not in the voicemail, I just didn't catch them, and I just kind of was like, oh, you know, for time, I thought it was just kind of the same. So, you know, definitely if you do give voicemail like this and you just hold off to what you do when you're written, you know, that works too. So I don't miss it. So I'm sorry if there was any points in there that, you know, I ended up skipping over because that's not what we want to do. But thank you again, Renee, for your voicemail as always.
We love you.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm glad someone else saw the manipulator that is June, because she does manipulate. I mean, she is a survivor, but she kind of like, you know, weaves her way around and has a tendency to, you know, if she has a better chance of survival with Strand, she's going to go with Strand versus going with Morgan. You know, of course, at the time, she doesn't really know about Morgan, but of course, Strand is going to want June to be there because she's a nurse. She's, you know, a
trained medical professional.
A trained medical professional. Yeah. And I was also going to say a demonstrated medical professional. Like, you know, we've seen her, and we know that she can do those things. So,
yeah. I totally agree with her though. It's like, I like Lenny James, you know, and I do like Morgan, but I think what they've been doing in the show hasn't been always great. And I'm not really enjoying it. What they're using him as an fear. It kind of started off as being like, oh, cool, he's crossing over, this is going to be awesome, to now it's like,
Well, I think that what she said actually makes a lot of sense. Morgan is this show's Carol, where, you know, he flip-flops. And I think that's a good observation you're making there, Renee. He does. And he has done that. And I think he's done less of that. We don't hear him doing, you know, the I won't kill anymore thing that he did in the past. He's much more pragmatic about it, but you know, it's just like I like Morgan's character too, and I know some of the people that listen to us don't agree with that, and even Kyle, you're, you know, kind of having your issues with him, but I think that I also agree with her in the fact that it's got to a lot to do with how they're writing about that character. So,
yep,
it's, they could be doing a better job. And, you know, how much of it at this point do we know is COVID related versus budget? I mean, they're doing this whole, you know, like, let's have these two characters and these two characters together. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about what we saw in this episode later, but there's a whole lot of that so far this season. And, you know, hopefully that will stop at a certain point, but,
yeah,
that's what I've got to say about it. I think that I would like to see, we got to see more characters this week, but very disappointing on how they were brought in. So I'll just, that's a little hint of what I've got to say later.
Indeed so.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Renee, as always. All right. Well, we actually also got some feedback from Aaron from the internet.
I got it. Okay, Aaron from the internet says, given they've been so light on Alicia these last two seasons, they need to make it up next season. Even when they had access to her, she was only in part of the season instead of the lead as she should be. Maybe she's not done, but they could do better with her still, I feel. Give Alicia the respect she deserves already, series.
There was, in listening to our podcast from last week, there's one thing that I didn't say that I regretted not saying it the way that I should have. And that is, I did mention that she's directing this season. As part of that, what she has to do is ghost direct. So what she did is she followed around, I believe it was Michael E. Satrazimus, and each of the episodes that he directed, she ghosted him. So if you go back and, like, I haven't done this, okay, I'll say it first off, but if you go back and take a look at the episodes that he directed and then cross-reference how much Alicia's in them, I believe you will find that she's not in them much. I know, like, for example, like the season finale, the first two episodes of this season, he directed those. She's not in them. Okay. Now, that could have to do with COVID, but it could also have to do with something that is documented that I know she's done. She ghosted Michael E. Satrazimus to learn about directing because she's on, you know, tape for, okay, tape, not tape anymore, but she's on, there's footage of her talking about her directing this year. So I believe that's also a part of it. And I wanted to, I know we've talked about it already, but I wanted to talk about it in a different way to say, look, yes, she's directing, but she's also having, like, when she's directed, she's ghost directed. And when she ghost directed, she wasn't in those episodes. Hmm. So that's the thing I wanted to say.
Okay. She goes on to say, Brian's Canadian. He doesn't say about like Canadians.
Well, Canadians don't say about either. So that's kind of it depends on what area of Canada you're from. That said, my Canadian accent was much stronger than it is now. And I will also say this, for the most part, I think Canadian accents are just in general becoming less pronounced. They're all kind of blending into like a general American English type thing for most places. Like BC sounds most like, Western English, you know, so.
It's not like you're from the Maritimes.
I know when I first lived here, my accent was more pronounced than it is today, but I've lived here for long enough that
it's kind of worn off.
It's kind of worn off, yeah. Partially by trying to make it wear off and partially just naturally wearing off. But I've noticed in the past year, I've started saying y'all, and it's like, where did that come from?
Yeah,
because I never said y'all ever. So, you know, that just shows me that I've been here,
been hanging around with me too long.
Or Ruthie, I'm sure Ruthie says y'all.
And there you go.
Once in a while, but not really.
Yeah,
she doesn't say it too much. But anyway,
awesome.
Okay. Well, speaking of awesome, Aaron goes on to say, awesome sauce. I love when that sound clip plays every time. Big grinning emoji.
And that is, of course, the aforementioned Ruthie.
Yes.
Original host of the Fear the Walking Dead Doctor. Anyway.
Yes.
If that wasn't already known.
She goes on to say, they knew from last season when they jumped in the bunker to hide, LT, that it was a murder hole. So, yeah, acting surprised this season just feels like the writers forgot they had already revealed this element, and I didn't like that.
Mm. Mm. True.
I disagree. I disagree with you, too. Lol. Unnatural Texas fog. Big LOL. And several laughing and crying faces. Another good one, LT. And thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
She says, the same, Glennis. Dakota should have been Ash. The reason I had the food count in weak sauce, Brian, is because no main character is struggling for resources. Everyone is finding these well-stocked hideouts, and that's just unrealistic to me.
Point taken.
Indeed. Okay, is the saying you're looking for a drop in the bucket, LT? Could be. Okay, she says, strand mandos. Ha! Huh. There has to be tunnels to get out or rooftop zips until you're over the wall of zombies.
Yeah, they have something because we see in this week's episode, like they have like this whole like platform, like welcoming center. It's like,
yeah,
like how do you get there? And it's got a phone. Like what's going on?
Is it string?
I should have looked.
Yes. The string and lots of wax. Okay. She says the show needs more Alicia Renee. Big smiley face.
No one will disagree with that. No one will disagree.
Yeah.
She goes on to say, I vote for Virginia's twin, Carolina. And she says, I'll get you too, LT. Just give me time. Plenty of space on the cut Morgan screen time and or be gone Morgan bench. Uh-huh. You're right. Alicia only better take out Strand.
We'll see.
And then she finishes up with, in quotes, the kids show. Ah. Proceeds to skip that part.
Well, you have a bumper to like make sure you hear that. You can be like, okay, I'll skip.
Yep.
Indeed.
Thank you, Aaron, as always. All right, well, then we also got one from Clint from Indianapolis.
I can take this one.
Go for it.
Clint from Indianapolis says, caught this episode this past weekend, and it is the best of this season so far. I give it an 8.5 out of 10 repetitive daily routines. I give it an 8.5 out of 10 repetitive daily routines. I give it an 8.5 out of 10 repetitive daily routines. That's nice. A good one. That's a good one. I enjoyed the story we got from John Sr. and June in the Hole. The John withdrawals induced visions had a similar feel to a lesser extent as the TWD season 11 episode On the Inside. The set above ground was a bit creepy, even with the Star Trek TOS vibe it gave off. Obvious indoor set.
Indeed, sir.
Indeed. Or the TNG Planet Hell.
Yep. All right. Thank you so much, Clint. Well, that was all of our feedback and responses from last week's episode. So let's go into this week's episode. And this week we have Fear the Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 4, titled Breathe With Me, written by Nazrin Chowdhury and David Johnson, and directed by Tara Nicole Way. Description is, while searching for Wendell, Sarah crosses paths with a dangerous survivor.
Ooh.
All right, well, let's go into our ratings. I gave this I couldn't really think of anything funny or, you know, anything specific. I just said 7, just 7.
I'm going to give it 7.5. Why did you kill that dog?
Yes, and I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. Fear the Dukes of Hazzard.
I get it. That's a deep cut.
Well, that's what we're here for, man.
All right, well, let's go into our listeners' ratings, and I'll go the first one. Dieta from Detroit, she gave it a 7 out of 10. Facepalm, facepalm, facepalm. I'm not liking or understanding this season at all.
Okay. Well, Glitz from Toronto gives it a 6 out of 10. Doggone Rufus.
Renee from Atlanta says, 5 out of 10. Josiah and Morgan are friends now? Facepalm, facepalm.
And finally, Clint from Indianapolis says, I give this episode 6.5 out of 10 solar-powered walkie-talkie chargers.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually. all right. Well, that was all of our listeners' ratings. So let's go into our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
And our first one comes from Dieta, but she actually just said, nothing was awesome in this episode. So shrug, shrug, shrug emoji.
Renee from Atlanta says, we got to see Al and them for 5 minutes. Eye roll, eye roll. Seriously, I thought they were going to do something big with this group. I mean, they did fly off in the CRM helicopter. Shrug, shrug.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, this does not feel like an awesome sauce. This feels like a weak sauce, but I digress.
This may be the most awesome sauce she's got.
Yeah, it was in her awesome sauce, but I mean, we did get to see Al and them for 5 minutes, but I would have put that as awesome.
This is like at Zaxby's, they have that one hot sauce that's called Wimpy.
Yeah.
So, Clint from Indianapolis is our final listener that gave us any awesome sauce. He says, the only good thing from the episode was we got some good character development for Sarah. Yeah, I would agree with that. That was probably one of the strong points of the episode.
Yeah.
Indeed, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was our listeners' awesome sauce. Thank you, everyone. And so let's go into ours. I didn't really have much other than kind of with what Renee was like. I was so excited to see everybody in the beginning, like even Charlie. And then it was just like, oh, and that was it. There was nothing left.
So. You were excited that we saw Charlie?
I know, because really? I was like, well, because it was just the whole crew and how they all came out, you know, at, you know, that one, you know, whenever Sarah, or they killed the walker or whatever. And then it's like, she's like, where's everybody? And they all just like came out in droves. And I was like, oh, it's the gang's back. So it was just like a good feeling. And then even Charlie, I was like,
except for the rabbi. The rabbi wasn't there.
No, but so. He was out doing stuff.
He was out with the congregation.
Yeah.
He's out being rabbinical.
The only thing I wrote down was that I didn't expect that we'd get this kind of story and this side of Josiah. I was kind of expecting like a retread of the first time that we saw his brother, and we got a very different story than I was expecting. One that made actually both characters be a little more redeemable. And there's obviously they left it so that they could bring back that character at some point. And I didn't expect to say it. I know it, like we said it last week, that I don't really want to see this character, but I thought he was really good this week. So he was a strong point, like particularly the scenes with Mo Collins, I thought were really good. And both characters, you know, kind of made the episode, I thought, for the most part, although we did see a couple of things that we'll talk about later.
Yep. And I will concur with you, Brian. I mean, we got a completely different view of that character, a little bit different perspective that I think softened what the dead brother was doing last season. And I kind of like Josiah. I think it's going to be good to have another unexpected character in the mix.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, we'll see him, like, hopefully they'll, you know, they won't make us wait, you know, a whole season to see him again. Like I would like to see him, you know, maybe like later in the season or even in the half season. So. But we'll see if it makes sense. That is,
yeah, and that should be a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I only have a couple things for my awesome sauce. Sarah had a dead battery.
What? Yes, I know. That's like
in Texas, in fear, someone actually had a dead battery,
and they didn't make it to Bill's.
That's right. And they didn't do the magic always working walkie-talkie story, which I thought was pretty, you know, obviously somebody's been listening.
Yeah, it was nice that they showed that she had that solar charger thing, you know, kind of attached, but it just like, you know, it just wasn't working when she needed it. But
yeah,
it was like, good, some explanation of like, hey, they are trying, you know, using something. And it's just not like, oh, they just have this big giant battery charger.
Yep. And the other point that I wanted to bring up was I really liked Josiah's shovel. And I'll explain why. Is that if you read the novel World War Z, that was one of the main weapons that everybody used to fight the zombies. And I forget, they had a name for it, but basically it was a combination pike, axe, and shovel that they basically equipped all the troops with. And so I thought that was nice. And the fact that a collapsible handle shovel with a pickaxe attachment would be a very handy tool for the apocalypse. So I was like, well, they're finally doing something practical. And it fits in with his character being, you know, a search and rescue guy and being, you know, theoretically like a park ranger. That fits the character. It's a piece of equipment that I could see him using. And obviously he gets a lot of utility out of it because he doesn't just dig holes. He kills zombies with it. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it totally is. Cool. All right. Well, if that was all of our awesome sauces, well, let's just go into our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
And it looks like we just got one that was given for our listener's weak sauce, which was Dieta from Detroit. And she said, whomever's bright idea it was to say, hey, let's have a nuclear bomb go off this season, should never be allowed to write for any other shows ever. Thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down.
Not liking the nuclear bomb, huh?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because, you know, we've got a nuclear bomb here. We've got on the other show, we've got a chemical weapon. You know.
Yeah.
Just seems like suddenly we've gone down, you know, the WMD Parkway in the apocalypse.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, Dieta. All right. That was all our weak sauce. So let's go into ours. I didn't really have any. So, Brian, you want to go off with it? I see that you have.
Well, I mean, the most obvious is that they barely showed the rest of the cast. I mean, talk about like what a.
Yeah.
I mean, they set it all up for, you know, us getting to see pretty much everybody and having an episode where, you know, we see everyone and they're in the cold open and, you know, we basically see like, you know, a line or two from each of them. And that was it. You know, for all we know, it could have been shot in such a way that they weren't even in the room when most of them said their lines, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, it was kind of disappointing to say the least. I had to subtract at least one from my score when I was trying to figure out what to rate this one. So,
yeah, me and LT actually were talking about this before we started tonight, and it was like kind of, you know, just about how, like, you know, it all seems very COVID-y still, you know, where we're having these episodes with just like two characters and that's it. And LT brought up a, you know, saying it's like, well, you know, this could have been shot much later when, you know, there were less restrictions or things were like a little bit better. And so then most of the episode was actually, you know, during all the COVID lockdowns and stuff. And so it's like, maybe that's what it was, but
yeah.
But
yeah. So in other words, maybe they that last part of the cold open was shot later. You're thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be, you could be right.
I'm thinking the cold open in the beginning were shot later just because you had more people. And I would be willing to go ahead and go on record and say this might have been a rewrite.
Yeah.
Once they had shot all the footage with Sarah and Josiah, that they came in and said, well, look, hey, we got restrictions lifted. We can get the cast together. Let's kind of change this up a little.
Or maybe they thought, well, you know, they tried to write it a certain way, or they tried to shoot it a certain way and it didn't work. And they said, well, we'll do this later, or, you know, however.
Right. Maybe they wrote it planning on the restrictions being lighter later.
Yeah. Which makes sense, you know, so.
You don't have to shoot it in the sequence you watch it.
No.
Right.
And they don't do that typically. So, and that seemed right. Like at the end, the very last episode, even though that did still feel kind of COVID-y because, you know, Victor and all the, like, everybody was still standing kind of apart, but, you know, we got to see more of them. So,
well, and that's the thing these days, like if they're standing apart, you know, enough, they could, you know, with the magic of like, you know, After Effects or whatever, software they use, they could put them in one room and then like shoot all that stuff separately, you know, and just match them in. That they can do a lot of stuff like that these days.
Oh yeah. But see, I would even go more old school than that, Brian. I think that with some cunning camera placement and, you know, how you lay the shot out, you could maintain your, social awkwardness and still get them in a shot where they look like they're standing closer together.
Well, and plus you can use doubles, right? I mean, so there's all sorts.
Ask Yumiko.
Right. Right. But like, you know, they can do it, you know, old fashioned way and, you know, just bring in a body double and, you know, shoot them from when we see them, we see them shot from the back and it's, you know, just somebody else, you know, so there's lots of ways they could do it. The technology is much changed from the way it was, you know, back in the day. They can
pretty much do anything now.
Or even when they first started the series.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And it's worth saying too that, you know, when The Walking Dead was on for years, it was shot with film. And now it's digital, and I believe Fear's been digital all the way through, but they can do even more on digital versus film. So, you know, anyway, my other weak sauce is not to do with this episode, but I have to give one to AMC Plus. There's some things that it's been doing that have been driving me crazy. One thing I don't even have listed here, but I'm going to say it first. And that is, it'll bring you a show. It'll make you log in every time, whether you logged in an hour ago or you logged in, you know, whenever it makes you keep logging in. So that's one thing. Another thing is, brings to the episode, you say resume or restart, you press resume and it restarts.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. And the other thing that's doing is I have a screen capped here. I was having trouble trying to play Fear the Walking Dead. Was a couple of days early, and over multiple days, I was trying it, and I've been using Edge usually to watch these episodes. For some reason, I find it it runs video better than Chrome does. Probably because I have too many extensions on my PC. But anyway, Edge just runs under the same Chromium technology, so it's pretty much the same. But anyway, I digress. So I tried to play it on Edge, and I kept getting internal server error on the thing. It says the page you requested could not be loaded, and I kept getting that multiple times. And I kept getting other errors on my phone that would say something similar. It wouldn't say that, but it would say like, "Oh, we can't play this video," and this happened multiple times, and it would let me sometimes it would not let me play either like Fear or World Beyond. And then like this time that I captured it, wouldn't let me play the Fear episode, but it let me play World Beyond. And then eventually I was able to play Fear once I tried it in a different episode, a different browser. But the stupid thing is, like, I tried deleting my cache. I tried, you know, all the things that you're supposed to do. Nothing worked. So I think that they still need to work some of the bugs out of AMC Plus. So that's what I'll say. And it's hard to find the way that they have it set up, like you can save like the programs that you like, but then trying to like uncover those save programs, they don't show up, you know? So when you go to For You, those programs that you've saved don't show up. So I don't get it, but that's my bitching about AMC Plus.
Yeah. Well, don't want to deal with glitches when you're trying to get people to watch, you know, your shows and pay for it. I'd be up.
Oh yeah.
Upset. I will say when it works, when the player works, it's good. So, I mean, it's not a total crap out. There are a lot of things about it that work, but there's still some glitchiness to it. So that's what I'll say.
All right, AMC Plus, fix it.
Well, it's funny to me. It sounds like work, my work, but it's always browser A works fine. Browser B doesn't. Browser B works fine. Browser A doesn't.
And, you know, like I know what this stuff's like. I do this for a living, so I understand, but it's still, it's a pain in the butt when you can't play, you know, like, and I didn't just have problems in the browser. I was having problems on my iPhone. So, you know, that's what was making it frustrating to me. Anyway, that's all I have this week.
All right, AMC, I hope you're listening. Fix it. All right, LT, what do you have?
Well, for starters, I have to give a weak sauce to the aforementioned jump into the canyon in the Durango. The airbags didn't go off.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's the aforementioned Dukes of Hazzard, in case you didn't get the reference earlier.
Indeed it is. I mean, I'm glad they didn't do the James Bond Mission Impossible super explodey car, but going down the bank, as hard as that thing hit, A, the airbags would have gone off. B, all the crap in the back of that Durango would have come out through the windshield. The said occupants of the vehicle would have come out through the windshield. I'm not saying that was an unsurvivable jump, but that would have been hope your seatbelt holds, broken legs, paramedics with Hirsch tools and carbide saws. I'm just saying.
Their walkie-talkies can work, but the airbags
they're freaking walkie. Yeah, their freaking walkie-talkies work, but and the fact that it sustained no discernible crush or frame damage from that. And I'm sorry, I just have to call major shenanigans on that one. I'm going for weak sauce for the same thing that I think everybody else has complained about, that we only got about 10 minutes of the Hilo posse. I'm glad that we got to see everybody. I'm glad that we got to see Al. I'm glad that they survived the crash of the helicopter that we did get to see, but I just thought it was pretty weak and pretty lame that we had this setup. We see him in the beginning, and then the rest of the time it's, you know, Sarah sitting on a hill talking on the radio, watching the grass blow, Sarah talking on the radio, looking through binoculars. Come on, we could have done a little bit better than that, because all of us have been wondering where everybody's been and what everybody's been up to, and this is all we got.
Yeah, agreed.
I really enjoyed the Sarah story. Do not get me wrong. However, comma, I just, it annoyed me more giving me that little bit of teaser of Daniel and Charlie and Luciana and Al, and then not doing anything else. I've got it as weak sauce. I had it last week. I got it this week. I still want to know where he got that head in the box. And it's obvious from the dialogue we got this week that, yeah, he's pissed off about his brother, but he loves the dog. Yeah, you know, he loved Rufus. But yet, what caused all the problems? What caused all this sadness? The head in the box. So I'm just saying, it's gonna bother me just because it just is.
And it's still in a box somewhere. Like that's what I was asking before. Well, I'm like, I didn't get, or I didn't see where they put it after their, you know, kumbaya moments.
I'm hoping when he buried Rufus that he buried the head. Cause
I thought that they killed the head.
Well, they did kill the head, but with his penchant for burying zombies, I mean, I just don't figure he'd leave it laying there.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Well, that's some good weak sauce there. I mean, that's why I didn't really have much, because you guys pretty much were saying some of the same stuff I was going to say. All right. Well, then that takes us into our what sauce.
What?
And we got one what sauce from our listeners, and it comes from Renee from Atlanta. And she says, why would they bring Josiah back to kill Morgan? And once he gets the chance, it's like nothing, just nothing. Rufus gets bit and Josiah screams, what have I done? And starts whimpering. It just seems so far-fetched to me, and I just wish this would have never happened. I do feel Josiah could have been a wonderful addition to Fear, but at the beginning, when he first appeared, to bring him back as a twin takes away from the actor, and I can't get into his character. From the beginning, yeah, but not now. I'm glad he left, and I hope he does not come back, but this is a Fear, and they don't know how to leave crap alone. Shrug, shrug. Well,
like I said, I like the character. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back in the right circumstances.
Yeah, that's kind of where I would lean to it. Because, I agreed with what you were saying in, like, what your awesome sauce or whatever was, like, that there. I was expecting something completely different, and then that's not what they gave us. So that did kind of was a little bit of a relief.
Yeah.
At least put his character and being like, oh, okay, you know, he'd actually at the end, I was kind of like, oh, cool. Like, that's just a really probably a good type of person to have on your side if Victor is going to be the issue that we're thinking they assume that's what we're going to see. So, yeah, it's like I kind of came back to like, okay, cool, you know, come back. We'll hopefully, you know, it'll be at the right time and, you know, be at a good part where, you know, he could come, yes, help save our people, or like, you know, or ruin one of Victor's plans, or, you know, or something like that. So we'll just have to see. Oh, thank you, Renee. All right, well, let's go into our what sauce. And mine, basically, I thought it was kind of funny that, like, that Morgan actually suggested like everybody to come back to the sub at the end. And then I was thinking, you know, he was, Strand was saying like, oh yeah, it's like, oh, Morgan's not doing really great. And, you know, and it's like, and he even said, he's like, no, I'm not doing great.
I had a problem with this though, because we saw that they had a whole stockpile of food that they didn't know they already had, you know? So at the time when, what's his name? Howard, when he saw them, it would appear that they were doing poorly. But since then, we know that they have quite a bit of food now. So, I mean, to me, there's a disconnect.
Or no. And like, that's why I don't know if Morgan was just, basically lying about it. But, I mean, but the thing is, though, the problem I was kind of having, though, was like, okay, well, he's like suggesting everybody come like to the sub, which supposedly has no food, which we know he has some food, but is also surrounded by fallout. And then he just meets, you know, Sarah and knows that the rest of the team is like doing well and they're in a different place and not surrounded by fallout. That I was like, what's going on? You know, I'm like, why wouldn't you be like, oh my gosh, cool. Hey, let's like all regroup, you know? And instead, you know, he's just like, oh, you guys go do your thing. And I know he's there. We get the thing at the end where there's the nuclear weapon with the other people. But, you know, it's like, why wouldn't you be like, oh, cool. Like, let's get the group back together again. And then also it's like he left Grace and the baby at the sub, but yet he's like running around all over Texas, you know, like that. And like in areas that are not surrounded, but like are in, you know, fallout. And it's kind of like a weird thing of like, what's going on? Like, why is the sub a better option than finding Sarah and being like, oh my gosh, cool. Like, hey, let's all meet up or whatever. You know, it just seemed,
you know, go back to the sub and load up the Apocalypinto with all those cans of food and drive to, you know, Casa del B&B or where everybody else is.
Yeah. Why didn't they go back there?
Yeah. Well, and then also I know Grace was like, you know, or during their episode, you know, they were under the assumption from the two people they met that it was like, oh, everywhere they went, it was like, it was just really bad. And they got all, you know, sick and like dying. But again, Morgan is actually seeing that that's not the case. So I don't know. I don't understand why, like, why sub, you know, like you guys could get out of there and not have to be spending your 6 minutes, you know, roaming around in the Pinto.
Right. And I figure that Morgan lied about the food because he didn't want, you know, the Strand Commandos making another visit.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. But I, at the same time, I kind of wondered why we didn't see him tell,
tell Sarah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I'm lying.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
we're better off than they think. So
yes, we have pudding.
Don't get me started about pudding. I have been on a pudding kick this week.
Oh, nice. Actually, gosh, I haven't had pudding in a long time. Sounds yummy.
Well, sorry, every time I see number 10 cans, that's the first thing I think of.
Well, I'll just go on the last or the next part. It was just like, how the feel of this season's been going so far. And it's like, I feel like it's just a repeat of season 5. And it's like Morgan is like, you know, well, our group, and then Victor is just Virginia. And, you know, we have Morgan where he's all like, oh, no, kind of like, you know, we're better, you know, we have the right idea.
Oh my, you know, God.
What?
Where are the kids?
Well, yeah, there's no kids.
Oh, except the kids. Where did they go?
Actually, well, they're dead, aren't they?
I don't know. But as soon as he said, you know, I started thinking the plane, and then it's like, wait a minute, where are those kids? What happened to them?
That's true. We don't know. Maybe Victor has them now.
The kids are actually the ones that are stealing people's clothes now. They grew up and got a wagon. And
or watch, the kids are the ones. They're like the leaders of this like weird, whatever, stripping people.
That's right.
Anyways, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like, it's, to me, it's getting to where I'm like, I want more. I want something better story-wise, because I feel like it's like this is just being predictable and it's just like blah, blah, blah. And I feel like the acting, it's like Strand is obviously fitting into his role as being like, you know, some kind of general, but like, you know, whatever, you know, with his clothes and outfits. But I even felt like why did I just forget his name? I can't think of it. Oh, Josiah.
Oh,
no, like what? Like just the way he was acting. It was like, it, I don't know. It was just seemed very like, I don't know the word, but I guess like a what do you call it? A spaghetti Western. Like everything was everything seemed very like, oh, I'm going to talk slow and like I'm making this big point about why I'm mad, you know, and Strand does that. And we know Strand's, that's kind of part of his character, but I don't know. I just, it's so anticlimactic to me. And it's like, it just, I don't feel like there's any of this real sense of like danger or urgency. We're just like kind of watching them just talk and do things. And, you know, it's like there's just not much. The way the show is going is, it is kind of making things just not that exciting. And it's kind of sucks because, you know, even when we have this like other group, you know, that like, oh, now they have this bomb. But then it was just like they say something like, oh, we can use this to get what we want. And it's just kind of like, okay, aren't you guys going to die by being next to that bomb? And then, you know, are you talking about Victor? You know, and then it's like, but again, you know, like, what's your point? Like, who are you guys? And like, what is it? And I don't know. It just, feel like this is what this season's kind of turning
and
out.
Kyle, even worse, not only are they going to be killing themselves by toting this thing around, they're going to contaminate wherever they go.
Yep. So yeah, because it's got a big hole in it.
Yeah. If they take it over to Strand's place, they basically, you know, they're basically dumping radioactivity.
Yeah, everywhere they go.
You know, in their wake. So, yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah.
My style and color.
Well, yeah.
And I'm thinking, too, how are they going to use that as a negotiating instrument? Are they going to have one guy with the little hammer, you know, tapping the thing going, don't make me hit it. I'll set it off. Ding, 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 ding.
Well,
ding,
no,
ding,
that's, yeah, that's a big what, too, because it's kind of like, okay, if that goes off, that's not some tiny little explosion. That's going to take out like a half mile, if not, I don't know how.
Well, and even if it didn't go off, let's assume for a moment that the warhead was faulty. A nuclear warhead still has quite a bit of conventional explosives in it. So if it goes off and doesn't go nuclear, then basically what you've got is a big freaking dirty bomb. So it's going to be worse than a nuke because it's going to spread all that radiation, and it's going to be worse radiation than a post-nuclear explosion.
No, good point.
So just the fact that the unexploded nuke is possibly more dangerous than the nuke itself.
Well, I mean, if they survive long enough to use it for whatever they need to get from who, you know, that was the other question. It was like, who are they trying to go after? We don't even know who their enemy is. You know, they've just been running around, you know, messing with walkers and taking their clothes off. It's like, they're the goodwill of Amarillo. Anyways, that's all I had, so you guys can take it from here. What did you have for your what sauce, Brian?
That stupid thing about it's better that you don't know, you know, so that's the excuse. Well, you know, we don't get to tell you about CRM. It's better that you don't know. And that's just kind of wearing thin for me. So what's with the dude, the dude that, you know, he makes him strip down. And so what was that dude, and what's with the wagon train of the dead, and what's with them stripping the dead? Like, I didn't understand that. Do you guys have any understanding of what that all was all about? Cause I was just kind of like shaking my head, kind of going, huh?
Well, the only thing I could think of is that they're trying to use all that clothing as some sort of protection, or they're trying to harvest any type of, you know, goods and materials that they can get off the walkers. But I don't understand why they were keeping them in the shed all corralled up. That just didn't, that's just kind of like, okay.
Well, and they mentioned something about dispersing them. Too.
Yeah, that's what I, like they were asking that guy, it was like, why aren't you out there, dispersing them? And it was kind of like, so yeah, like what's, I don't get the plan. Like, who are they after? We don't know any of that. So,
like, is this like you know, like the disciples of Teddy or something that are out maybe there to, you know,
or maybe they're like the Walker ASPCA. They're trying to spread them out so that they have more roaming habitat.
Or it's time to spay and neuter your Walker.
They need to spend a little time explaining that one. You know, give me a little bit more background on what they're up to.
Well, and it would make sense then, it would fit that, like, oh, these are, because, you know, Teddy, when he died, he still had his people, you know, there's still people that were his, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, that could make more sense. I mean, like, okay, so these are just like Teddy's remnants, you know, that are still doing stuff.
And that would make sense to me. I just hope that it's not going to take us a whole season to find that out.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like if they wanted to keep Teddy's disciples, they should have just kept Teddy, you know, because I think a whole season of Teddy would have been actually pretty interesting, but they didn't go that way, you know? So.
Yeah. Or, I mean, or at least told us like who, or, you know, get clued us in on that's who they are. So that when they show up, you're like, oh gosh, okay, there's the other threat, you know, that's like, you know, Teddy's followers, and they can be pretty dangerous. And
yeah, and they wanted this dud. Okay, so you know, why do they want, they must want it to kill everyone else, or you know, maybe they would, you know, do something to spread radiation and radiate all those walkers, which would, you know, maybe take out everyone else, you know. I don't know, but I don't know. So that's why it's in the what sauce, because I've got questions.
Yep.
If Strands got Wendell, why did he not take his wheelchair? I didn't understand that. Along a different point, is Strand lying about taking Wendell? I mean, that seemed kind of cruel if that was the case, but especially when he made her think that he's there. Yeah. So if he's lying, that would be, you know, it would be worse than, I don't know. I hope that he's not lying, put it that way. And my last point, I actually took a slight, you know, quarter point off this. I think it's unrealistic for Josiah to be burying every dead that he comes across at this point. Because if he did that, that's all he would be doing for the rest of his life. Like every hour of every day, he'd be burying.
He'd be digging a lot of holes.
Yep. So that's it.
Okay. Well, I've got a couple. When they were at the tower, when they were at the little, you know, welcome to Strand's Tower patio with the phone, which I guess they've got like gates or access points so that some straggler can come up and, you know, call the welcome line and have somebody meet him at the gate. I just thought that was a little nice touch, but it's sort of a little too nice, if that makes sense. And mm-hmm. I guess the other thing is, Mr. Historian, when he was down there with Strand, and I know this is going to be another deep cut, Brian, but he started sounding like Butch's sidekick, Woym, from the old Little Rascals movies, because Strand would say something, he'd go, you know, it's like, well, if you're not going to come inside, you're going to have to go back out there. And he's going, yeah, out there.
Well, see, what I would think of when you say that is Grover Dill. And if you don't know that one, Grover Dill is Scott Farkas's little toady that we see in A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same vibe. The same thing.
That's great.
Or if you want to put it in a friendlier context, it's kind of like he's the Ed McMahon to Strand's Johnny Carson.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like
yes. Yes, sir.
You know, it really bothered me just from when we first saw this guy, you're thinking, well, he's some, you know, he's going to be some more intellectual, more, you know, a smarter kind of character. And I just didn't see him, like I said, turning into the, you know, yeah, Strand, tell him what you're going to do to him. Or, there was one of the cartoons, and I want to say the dog's name was Butch, but it was the little sidekick. Yeah, Butch, tell him you're going to mess him up. Tell him how big and bad you are. Yeah. My buddy Butch is going to wipe the floor with you. That whole scene just struck me as, and so now you're just an accomplice toady after you gave Strand your big tower full of historical archives.
Yeah.
Yep. That's.
And I'll have to just vaguely sidebar your thing about why they didn't take Wendell's wheelchair. Is it like they're going to make him like, make him like the master in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? They're going to have something that Wendell's just going to be like running the machinery because he can't walk.
Yeah.
And let's be kind of honest here. If Strand has his utopia of people that can help, isn't having somebody who can't walk kind of a liability unless he has some specialist skills that he can utilize without having to be, you know, mobile?
Well, they could also have another wheelchair.
Well, that's true. I mean, God knows they've got everything else.
Yes. So a solar powered wheelchair.
Maybe they have a powered one.
Yeah.
So
we could.
Who knows?
Yeah. I don't think Strand is lying about Wendell. I didn't quite kind of feel that. It's like, because I mean, well, Strand also seemed to go on about like, oh, Wendell has a very good eye for a blah blah blah,
yeah,
blah as a job. So it was kind of like,
I'm hoping he's not lying. I'm not saying that he's lying. I'm hoping he's not lying.
No, right.
Because think about it like this: what would be Strand's angle for lying to Sarah?
Right. It's
other than trying to make her feel better. And I just don't see Strand doing that unless he thinks that eventually he's going to get her to come in.
Yeah, that's that's a good point
because just lying to her to make her feel better is not going to accomplish anything to his ends.
No, but he did make the threat though, saying that like, oh yeah, you can call him and he can come out here, but once he's out, he doesn't come back in.
Right.
And so yeah, to lure her in, because that's to me is what this whole MO with like Victor seems to be, is just like he wants to do anything just to make Morgan look bad or like poke his, you know, stick him in the eye, like look what I got, you know, and trying to take, you know, take more people away from Morgan. It's like his whole shtick is seems to be that. So and it's very, I'm like, like I don't know. All right, well, let's go into our sad and aw sauce.
Aww.
And we got one from our listeners, which came from Renee from Atlanta. And she says, this whole season so far, eye roll. I mean, the Strand storyline has so much potential, but they're making Strand look and act cartoonish. Strand knows how to be a villain, so let him be one without looking all buffoonish. And the wasteland is not being used to its full potential because everyone is treating it like it's normal by going in and out like it's nothing. Thank you, Renee. I just will agree that, you know, the Strand storyline definitely to me, I thought was going to, you know, had so much more potential for them to do. And we still know that that's still going to be something that, you know, is going to be a part of this season. But, you know, the way they're playing it off, I don't know. You know, we'll just see. We'll just see what they do, and hopefully, you know, I just feel like we have all these other elements that keep kind of bumping in the way, and it's just like, what's this got to do with what we, you know, the main arc, if that's what this is. The wasteland not being used to its full potential. I mean, yeah, doesn't seem to bother anybody that they can just take pills now because Al has tons of them. She always has everything.
Yeah, I wondered about that. Is that a thing? Like, you can just, oh, here's your radiation pills.
Well, you can take potassium, was it sodium potassium or potassium whatever, or just potassium. Like,
it's iodine.
Basically, yeah.
It's because you take iodine tablets and it absorbs the radiation and it, what is it, lodges in your thyroid gland.
And it keeps it from being absorbed into your thyroid, right?
Yeah. Something and it supposedly keeps you from getting super sick, but it's still not going to protect you from long-term exposure.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Potassium was also one of those things, but maybe that I'm thinking of something else, obviously. Well,
the thing that they mentioned was Prussian blue.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking it up to see what...
Prussian blue. Prussian blue is a medication used to treat cesium and thallium radiation poisoning.
Yeah, I just came across that myself.
When taken after exposure, Prussian blue keeps the radioactive material trapped in the intestines where the body can eventually flush it out. So there you go.
Well, but that's not a stopgap measure, or is that actually like you can pretty much...
In other words, you can have radioactive poop.
Indeed.
Yes. All right, well, let's go into our sad and awesome. We've already kind of talked about it, but it was just the little that we saw of Al, Daniel, Wes, Luciana, and even Charlie. It was just nice to actually get to see them, you know, this after this much time. Hopefully we get to see them again soon. That's all I had.
Well, it's the main reason why I took off, well, it's half of my deduction on this episode. Why did they have to kill Rufus? You know, I'm sorry, but why'd they kill the dog?
Yeah.
I say if, you know, if Rufus dies, we riot. And here, you know, we have the death of Rufus. So do we riot? Remember how people were so upset when Shiva died?
Yep.
Oh, yep. Yep.
Yeah. That was basically the, for those that don't remember, Shiva was the tiger on The Walking Dead. And yeah. And people were really upset when the tiger died. And I haven't heard that many people complaining about Rufus, but then again, not as many people watched.
Well, that's what I say. It's like poor Rufus just didn't have a fan fans that poor show.
Blame Rufus's agent.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just but it is surprising. It's like they didn't have to. Like Rufus could have, you know, I guess they needed to for the plot to make Josiah like have his come hither moment or whatever, changed his whole outlook.
And I could have put this in what sauce, but you know, the thing that I'll say next is if dogs aren't susceptible to the virus, you know, that causes the apocalypse, why did Emil's head, or how did Emil's head bite enough on Rufus to kill him? Like, how is that possible? You would think that, you know, a severed head would only be able to, you know, just take a little bite out of Rufus. Like, is he?
Yeah, we don't know anything really that, like, you know, because if you get bit, then you get sick and you get like a fever and you get
like maybe right. maybe a dog would die from it but not come back, you know,
yeah.
become undead. So I mean that might be the case. So if that's the case, then I guess I understand it, but still, I mean, it seemed
well, we were already talking about it last week about Rufus traipsing around through the radiation. You know, maybe Rufus was on the edge and the bite was enough to push him over.
Sick, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like where was Rufus going to, you know, they weren't counting 6 hours on Rufus. Rufus was out there for a long time. So, yeah, your point's taken.
Well, and we've seen deer and horses die from zombie bites. So
we have, but deer and horses have usually had multiple. Yeah. It's not, they've not like been killed by, you know, one zombie. It's usually they're killed by multi zombies. In the case,
the ones we've seen.
Right. Right. But usually what we've seen is usually like, multiple.
Yeah, like big gashes.
Multiple and like, zombies that are, you know, dining on the flesh of a horse or deer at the same time. The next point I wanted to say is, so did Daniel forget to close it, or is he just doubting himself at this point? And the fact, either way, I think is kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and the last part, I think it's also sad, of course, that Sarah had to let go of Wendell.
Yeah.
And that's it for my sad.
Aw. All right, LT, did you have anything?
I think the only part I would add to that is I hope that we get a happy reunion at some point rather than the normal Walking Dead ending that we usually get with Sarah and Wendell.
Yeah. Or, you know, not the... Wendell. And then, you know, next thing you know, she sees Wendell and he's zombie head Wendell.
Or Will on the roof Wendell.
Your services are no longer required, Wendell.
Yeah. Hans Gruber.
Yeah. Or we just don't see him again, like how they're doing with Alicia, where it's just like, oh, yeah, he's somewhere, but we just never see him again.
Chuck Cunningham. He goes up to his room and he's never seen again.
Well, hopefully that's not the case. All right. Well, let's go into our feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
And we actually have several voicemails to play today from our listeners. And I'll go with the first one that came from Megan from Pennsylvania. And this is about this week's episode, so let me go ahead and play that.
Hi, this is Megan Lehman again from Pennsylvania with feedback on this week's episode of Fear the Walking Dead. I haven't actually been able to watch World Beyond yet because we've been traveling a lot and just really busy. So I thought this overall was a very pretty good, enjoyable episode of Fear the Walking Dead. And I'm just really, really upset that they killed the dog, Rufus. Oh, my God. That was the saddest death since Shiva. I'm always going to be more upset at animal deaths than human deaths. But as long as the cat is still alive. What's his name? Shitstain? I can't remember. The poor cat has the worst name ever. I thought that Mo Collins had a really strong performance for the most part as Sarah this episode. She did some pretty good acting, and I like the new guy too. But man, that was a fast turnaround from I'm going to seek and kill Morgan to now I'm buddies with Morgan. Kind of interesting. They could have done a little better job of you know, showing them explaining the situation to him regarding how his brother, you know, had been murdering people. Seems like they did. That was sort of in the context of some of the conversation, but it really could have been a little more explicit. Although I don't think it was a total on characteristic turnaround, because there were a lot of clues throughout the episode that he was a good person. He was a park ranger, he was a search and rescue person, so it was, you know, his job was to save people, not kill people. He didn't kill Sarah at the beginning when she was really mouthy and like aggressive toward him, and even when she tried to kill him in the car and everything, and throw him out of the car. So obviously that showed that he was not super violent, because a lot of people would have just been done with her at that point. And then the fact that he was burying the walkers that he killed out of respect, I thought that was really interesting. So I hope that they have him come back on. It sounds like he probably will. I also hope that they told him that Rufus had saved that baby's life, because I think for him grieving for his dog, that would mean a lot to him to know that he had done something so monumental. When he led the zombie mom with the baby and the carrier over to Morgan and Grace. A couple more things. This new group, for some reason, I'm getting like Tusken Raider vibes from them. Like, they're like running around and picking up scrap stuff and just being like aggressive and not communicating well. I don't know. Strand has some amazing style, and it's comic-y, but it's cool. Coleman Domingo is clearly enjoying himself with this turn in the role, and they do have him cutting quite a figure. He looks great, and with all the jewelry and everything I noticed this week. And I'm really glad to know that Wendell is okay, and using his talents. They said he was really good at organizing and cataloging things, so they're using him kind of as a logistics manager, which I thought was kind of cool. And even though he's off screen, I really like that actor, and I had seen him years ago in another show and wish that he would be actually on screen, but it's good to know the character is safe. So those are my quick thoughts on Fear. Have a great week. Bye.
Thank you, Megan. Awesome voicemail. We definitely enjoyed your shit stain remark. Oh, I mean, Skidmark is the name of the cat. But yeah, animal deaths. Like, we were just talking about that, but it was like Skidmark is probably going to be just fine. Like, cats.
Mm-hmm.
Skidmark seems much more independent and also like more of just like takes care of themselves.
Yeah, where's Skidmark? That's a good question. Did Skidmark survive the blast, or
hashtag where's Skidmark?
Was Skidmark on the helicopter? I doubt it.
I guess we might never know, but I'm sure Skidmark is probably doing fine, eating some radioactive mice, and then probably has got some superpowers by now.
By the way, Daryl, I don't know if he goes by this anymore, but Daryl Chill Mitchell. I knew him from Night Court. That's where I first, I think it was Night Court. Was it Night Court? Or was it the John Larroquette show? I'll have to look that up now. Yeah, it was the John Larroquette show I knew him from. So not Night Court. So same actor as, one of the leads, but not Night Court.
All right. Well, let's go into our next voicemail. And this came from Dieta from Detroit. And it's a two-parter because she ran out of time. So I'll play the first one and I'll go right into the second
one. And awesome. Sweet. We got so many voicemails this week.
Yes, definitely much like enjoy this a lot better than, or I mean, we like them all, but it's great to hear everybody's voices instead of like just hearing it through our voices. All right, here's Dieta's first.
Hi, this is Dieta calling from Detroit, and I'm calling about Fear of the Walking Dead talk back show. So, I know I left feedback online, just after, and I had to let that sit for a minute because I actually stayed up and watched the Fear the Walking Dead episode, like, after it aired, like I said, on DVR, so I fast-forwarded through the commercials, so it was about 30 minutes, which wasn't bad. But I couldn't comment that night, it was late, the hour difference probably had. But that whole show was awful. Because I'm sitting here watching, I was like, I wonder if it's because I'm tired and I'm just irritated with the show or not. But it starts off with Sarah waking up, I guess, out of her sleep stupor and not knowing where she at, and she's, which I didn't get. And to me, if you know somebody's unconscious or been out of sleep, why isn't somebody in the room kind of like watching her, you know, making sure, you know, she's not, I guess, going to sleep for good. But you guys just leave her in the room. She wakes up. She walks around. She screams, hello, hello, several times. Nobody says nothing. Nobody comes around. I'm looking like, where is she at? Like, I thought she was with the helicopter crew. That's what I call them. And then as soon as a walk out of the supposedly secure building walks in, then here comes everybody. I'm just... Just fear that they just kind of leave you with a loss of words, because it's like, don't nothing make sense no more. And I'm trying to watch it in suspension of disbelief and, yeah, but they trying to, you know. And then, you just can't, because it's like, so nobody was there that when she said hello, nobody heard her. But as soon as the walker, you know, of course she was trying to kill it or whatever, and she was still dazed from being out of it, but... Oh, man. And then you only see them like, oh, okay, they go to rescue. I'm thinking it's about to be a show with her, with them talking about what happened and whatever, whatever. Man, we get 5 minutes of them, and then next thing we know, she by herself, looking for Wendell. Calling, looking, which I don't know how she's looking for Wendell, because I thought Al said you can't go out there. It's only so far you can go, and I'm trying to figure out, well, exactly how far did she go out to look for Wendell? Because you don't see none of that. She's just basically sitting on mountains, and I don't know. This show is just, it's worrying me. I just can't. I'm sorry, y'all. Okay, this is Deanna from Detroit with part two. So, for Fear the Walking Dead. I didn't really call in to really comment too much more about the show, but Fear the Walking Dead just had you just be like, I don't know what to say about the show. I can't stop laughing because it just got comical to me, with all these so-called storylines and plots and whatever you want to call it. Like I said in my feedback, why in the hell put a bomb going off inside the show? This show didn't need that. If we were supposed to be seeing that the walkers and like, the first three seasons, a family trying to survive the apocalypse. They done went way left with this shit. I mean, now we got a bomb, you know, went off or whatever, and it's just too much. It's too much because they always walk around unprotected, except for when they over here, and then it's okay to go here. It's just stupid. But anyway, so I was calling because what I wanted to say, Sunday night was the season premiere for Yellowstone. So this was season 4, and people have been waiting for season 4 to come back because they left us with such a hell of a cliffhanger in season 3. And so, of course, COVID and, you know, all that pushed everything back. So we just been waiting. But when I tell you Yellowstone came back with a hell of a premiere after that cliffhanger, oh, my gosh, that's how you're supposed to do a show. I don't know if anybody watches Yellowstone or a fan of Yellowstone, but I am a true fan. I was outdone with that. Just the whole series, and they did a whole 2-hour, you know, like back-to-back premiere. But the way they came, they left us hanging, yeah. But the way they came back, we got answers, we got, you know, it was just, even they did a time jump. And you didn't mind the time jump because it made sense. It made sense. It's just like a whole different level of storytelling. So I don't know what they're doing over at Fear the Walking Dead. They need to sit down and watch Yellowstone and take some pointers because they are trashing this show completely. That's all I wanted to say. Love you guys. Renee, Brian, Kyle, LT, keep doing what y'all doing. And the rest of the whole Walking Dead Talk to Crew podcast, everybody that comments and leaves and everything. Love y'all. Stay safe.
Thank you, Deanna, for that wonderful voicemail. And
yay!
Yes, we love you too, and so happy, you know, starting to send more in. This is awesome. There's a lot just going on with fear, so I can't disagree with that comment. So,
nope,
at all.
Wow, Yellowstone looks like it has Walking Dead ratings now.
Is it 12 million or?
it's at 8. So
yeah, well, that's pretty good for now.
And never seen it. So
nope. Yeah,
I don't even get that channel. So I can't watch it.
Yeah, I'm not watching it, but it's like with many of my other stuff. I just add it to my list.
And if this was a Star Trek podcast, I could put this on my weak sauce, because Paramount Plus does not have shows from the Paramount Network on it, which makes no sense to me whatsoever, including this. Apparently, you need Peacock to get episodes of Yellowstone. That's what I hear. So shame on you, Paramount Plus.
Well, I think it's because NBC actually produces it.
No, it's, I don't believe so. I believe it's, I'll probably say it's wrong. Nope. No, it's, it looks like it's from there. And also worth saying that there are some, sequel shows to this. Like there's a prequel to Yellowstone. I can't remember the name of it. That's coming out soon, and that's on Paramount Plus. But the parent show or the original show is not on Paramount Plus. So anyway, it's
gotta be some weird licensing.
Yeah, there's a show. What is the name of the show? Spinoff. It's called 1883. Yeah, yeah. That's going to be on Paramount Plus, premiering December 19th. So.
Well, I guess thank you, Dieta, for the voicemail. Since we just went, with that, I might as well just go straight into her written feedback. Because there's a lot of more points basically about go in with what she put on the voicemail. So I'll just go ahead and read this. So Dieta from Detroit, she says, I don't know about y'all, but the whole season is confusing with the radiation levels and effects of it and time and distance. It's safe to walk around without the protective gear if you are anywhere but the submarine. I don't know why they decided to do a nuclear story run, just dumb and a waste of story, especially since it only affects a certain area, in my opinion. Now, Al has a stash of reactive pills. Sarah takes some, then gives the whole bottle to Josiah. But wait, wasn't Sarah and Morgan exposed to the warhead as well? I mean, come on, what is the point of them doing this nuclear story? They dropped a bomb and the walkers are still walking around like nothing's wrong. They just look melty and gross, but still walking around. This season is a total disappointment. Sad face. The mysterious helicopter ride from the CRM to the Sanctuary Fort, conveniently away from all the nuclear fallout, housing Al, Lucy, Wes, Charlie, and Daniel, the forgotten cast who got a whole 5-minute scene. Sarah just went off on her own to find her buddy Wendell, and nobody checks on her or knows she's gone? And here comes Morgan to the rescue. But wait, where's Grace and the baby Mo? Are we supposed to believe that they're held up in the submarine by themselves while Morgan goes out on rescue calls? How far are all these rescue calls from Ground Zero and possibly radiation contamination? Morgan and Josiah face off was so corny and weak. What a joke. The fight scene was like watching a low-budget film with low-budget actors, which resulted in getting Rufus bitten and killed. Just wow. What a waste. Then everybody has a kumbaya moment and know they are all friends and searching for Wendell again. What a plot waste for this season. And no, Strand enters the stage. Yes, I have Wendell and he's thriving in my community. And you can't come in because you're on Morgan's side. Huh? What the hell, Strand? Everybody was on Morgan's side? Geesh, nobody wanted to be under you or Virginia. Then he tells Sarah, I will bring him out, but he can't go back if he comes out. Sarah gets all breathy and has a panic attack until Josiah Morgan calms her down. She tells Strand, don't tell him I came. What the hell? So she did all that looking, walked walkie-talkie, panic attack breathing episode, linked up with an unknown man with a vengeance for Morgan, got Rufus killed, gave away the radiation pills for nothing. She did all this to find her so-called twin, only to leave him with Strand. Why wouldn't you let Wendell make that decision? He has been surviving the whole apocalypse just fine in his wheelchair and managed just fine now. You think that he's better off with Strand because of what? She doesn't know what Strand is doing behind those walls to anybody, and he definitely is showing you he is running things just like Virginia did, and nobody wanted to be under her when she was in charge. So why would they want to be under Strand? Make it make sense, facepalm, 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 Fear the Walking Dead. It's just throwing storylines together for the hell of it. Give me back my 30 minutes, please. Watch it on my DVR so I can fast forward through the commercials. Overall, not even a decent episode. Just a complete waste. Yawn, yawn. I don't know what that face is. Emoji with, like, probably...
It's like drowsy or...
Or yeah, or just, yeah, over it or something. All right. Well, thank you, Dieta. We've been kind of already kind of talking about it. There is so much stuff going on. And, you know, we got to see the helicopter group for like, you know, 10 minutes. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, it's like that could have been a whole story, or we could have seen, you know, them more or whatever. But yeah, it just is whatever it is. And it could be COVID, or it could have been they had to change something and whatnot. But, you know, we had to get the bounty hunter brother twin into the show somehow. So obviously this is the one way to do it. So, and that he's still alive, then maybe he's going to play a role in the future. What would you think about, do you think that Sarah should have let Wendell make the decision to come out? Like, I mean, I don't know. That's a kind of a good question. It's like, yeah, Wendell could have made that decision. He could have. She could have called. I mean, that or Les Strand was saying, oh, you can call him, but then he has to come out to like you couldn't talk over the phone or something.
Well, like he was saying that, you know, if he comes out, he won't
get,
he was basically forcing it so that if he was going to see her, he was going to have to come out. So
yeah, so like basically regardless.
So either he comes out and he stays out, or he stays inside. So he was kind of forcing it that way.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, come on, you know that if he'd have seen her, he would have gone out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah, and that's what she kind of alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of actually protecting him more than anything, but... Well, yeah, I don't know. Do you guys have any other comments to her reaction?
No, I think she's got some good points there.
Yeah, I don't have anything either, but thank you.
Thank you, Dieta. All right, well, all right. Who wants to take the next one? Renee from Atlanta?
I will. Okay, Renee from Atlanta says, I really was not interested in the Sarah and Wendell storyline at all. And the creepy folks that are corralling the dead need to be explained quick, fast, and in a hurry. I'm going to do like I did before and freaking blame this season on the COVID, because that's the only reason I can come up with this, that this season is so far off the rails. Shrug, shrug. We only have a couple more episodes and I just don't think it's going to get better. I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I just don't see it. And I'm right there with you.
Yep. You're mentioning that before we came on today. I know I always try to act like, although I've been a little bit more harsher in my, you know, reactions to the show this season than I normally do, but I do always still have kind of some little thing in the back of my head being like, oh, but please make, you know, they're just going through a few bumps, you know. We're just maybe the next half, the back half is going to be better. And then
you always want to have that glimmer of hope that yeah. they're going to that they're going to do something that's going to be, wow, that was amazing. It all makes so much sense now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's difficult to get to that point, especially like any show that has been on for a number of seasons. You know, it's difficult to, I don't know, do something different. And, you know, it's like sometimes I tell the story about when I was pitching to Star Trek. It was difficult. It got like difficult to next to impossible. And I finally stopped because there were more stories and more stories and more stories each season. So it's like trying to come up with an interesting, not ever done story is, you know, became almost possible. And it's a similar thing with this. It's like, well, you know, where else are you going to take the stories at this point? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's only so far that I think that they can go before, I don't know, but we'll see.
But this
season, I would say that this season is not as bad as say season 5 was, but it's not as good as season, even I'd even say last season. I thought last season was better.
Yeah.
I always want to put it in there and be like, oh, I hope they can do something, you know, maybe fix some issues, or I don't know, because, you know, it is kind of like how much of this was COVID, you know, and not to say that they didn't already have an idea and a kind of a direction that they were going to go, but how much did that change what they were going doing or what they were able to do? And
right.
So I'm kind of hoping that, you know, yes, there might be plot lines, storylines, different things. So we've seen that in the show forever. Just all like, oh yeah, everybody's got gas. Oh, everybody's got all this stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know, Grace is pregnant. So let's go to the local mall that obviously has like a medical unit that has, you know, like a portable, what do you call it?
Baby monitor.
The baby monitor. Whatever. Yeah. But it was like, okay, whatever. But
had an ultrasound, actually.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
But, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, so maybe this first half is kind of a little wonky, but then maybe the next half it starts kind of getting back on the rails. But, you know, we'll just have to wait to see. So I still...
Or it doesn't.
Well, no, exactly. But I like to at least cross my fingers and be like, okay, because, you know, it's like... not that saying I want anything that's just going to be like, oh my gosh, that just blew my mind. Like, and that was amazing. Like, this show is, to me, it's past that. I think even The Walking Dead is kind of past that. It's like, and that's why I think it's good that they're ending it now. You know, there's only so much you can do in a zombie apocalypse that hasn't already been done, you know, and, you know, it was more about characters and human interaction than it is actually about the zombies anyways. And, you know, the comics already ended and that's what they were using, as their baseline. And so it's kind of like, okay, if you even look online, you're going to know how the comic ended, which is probably going to be how this is going to end.
I think the thing, Kyle, just to steal part of what you said, I would love to see them get it back on the rails. Honestly, I would be happy if they could get the left side of the train on the right side of the tracks. And even though the train's balanced on one wheel,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, get back close to the tracks. You know, I think My perspective is I've developed a low expectation for the show and they continue to live up to it. And I guess I'm still hoping in my heart of hearts for more, but I keep getting disappointed even with my low expectations. And that's kind of sad.
Yeah. It's a good, that's where I'm
lowered expectations. Oh my God, that was bad.
You have to do the breathy voice. lowered expectations.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. All right. Well, next comes Gina from the internet.
I'll read it. Gina from the internet is next. Actually, I think Gina is from your neck of the woods, isn't she? From Illinois.
Yep.
She says, another car crash? Didn't we have one just last week? And they wrecked for the same reason. Someone in the car went bonkers. Poor Rufus. TWD is really hard on animals. If anything happens to dog, at the beginning, was Sarah trying to load a musket to kill the approaching walker? Seems a little impractical. She could have stabbed him with a bayonet or just stepped into another room. That being said, I enjoyed this episode more than the previous ones this season. It kept my interest, at least. And we learned how Sarah and Wendell got to be twins. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. That's a good point, bringing that up. I think the primary reason I like this episode is because I like Josiah, despite how he was introduced. In my opinion, this character overcame the silliness of him just happening to find his brother's head in the box, and then just happening to find Morgan so he could kill him, but ultimately become buddies with him. The whole Strand arc really gets on my nerves. Nothing seems to make sense with that storyline, to me anyway. I have no idea what Al said to Sarah at the beginning when Sarah wanted to leave the house to look for Wendell. She said, the pilot left us just enough something, something, something so we could get out. Was she talking about meds to prevent radiation poisoning? I believe so. That's where the Prussian blue came up. And
yep.
Yeah. And Gina, I think it's the first time we've heard from you, so thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for sending in your feedback. Good to hear from a new listener.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you for the feedback, and don't make it the last time.
And you are a neighbor of Kyle's.
Apparently, yes. I'm just north of her by 35 minutes. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Gina. All right. Well, let's go to our next listener. And this comes from Aaron from the internet, which is pretty short. Fear review. No review for this week because I had to get stitches in my arm, and the antibiotics and slight pain just made me sleepy. Sad face. I look forward to your recaps as my watch. get better, Aaron.
That's right. Glenn from Toronto says, those walkie-talkies and radios are pinnacles now in all shows. Sarah calling out to Wendell every day like John Sr. did, even Eugene when at Alexandria and TWD, and of course, in TWD WB. Both Rick and Morgan promised to keep daily contact too in Walking Dead Season 1, but now it's risky to do this walkie-talkie tango regularly every day as unwanted and dangerous folks are listening in. Strand's bunch, those body robbers, the ex-evil bounty hunter twin, and surely CRM knows who are all in the area with their surveillance systems. But the walkie-talkies also cut down on the number of cast in an episode. I don't think it's realistic that Al, Daniel, Charlie, Luciana, West would just let Sarah go out on her own like that, where it looks 100% better than living in the sub. And where Sarah was on top of that hill, it was clear, but the sub is still orange-hued. Wouldn't it be better to go out of the fallout zone and rather Morgan, Grace, and Mo go to where Al and company are located instead of going back to the sub? And as a side note, please, writers, showrunners, make Daniel a badass again, as he wouldn't have left the door open that let that rogue walker that was after Sarah that Al dealt with. I just don't like how this character has been ruined lately. None of us do. So more biological warfare is on the way with those zombie collectors carting that leaking nuke to parts unknown. That plot line has now been done to death. Literally. I would have liked the twin brother to remain on the show, but he's too good at what he does so they'd have just ended up wounding him or something similarly debilitating like the writers did all the time with Morgan, so that he mostly wasn't at his clear fitness and AMC Scrooge budget is showing again. The other actors, actresses must feel really neglected with their minimal use this far in the Fear the Walking Dead season 7. On the same subject, train of thought. Where in the world is Alicia? Indeed. Where is Alicia?
She is somewhere at a undisclosed location on an island in...
Codename Padre.
Yes. That we think. Yep. All right. Well, let's go on. Clint from Indianapolis, he says, hey, I was able to watch an episode before the podcast deadline. Yay, Clint. First for 2021. I think the episode started strong, giving us the biggest group setting of the season, but that lasted about 2 minutes. Then it was just another two-person episode. Yeah, we talked about that, and it's like, hopefully that changes. All right. Well, that was, thank you all, everyone, for your feedback. That was everybody's listeners, or all the feedback from the listeners. So we'll go into ours if we have any extras. I know we have a lot more to go with World Beyond. But Brian,
yes, we do.
You want to start off?
Well, the only thing I have to add is that I noticed that Maggie Grace is listed. Was listed this episode as guest starring. So I had mentioned before that her name wasn't showing up in the starring. Mm-hmm. Well, it appears that she is now off the main cast and is now in a guest starring role. So I don't know what this means. Is she leaving? Is her character going off into the sunset with Isabel? Is she going to die sometime this season? I don't know, but she as an actress is no longer part of the main cast. So, you know,
pretty big.
Interesting.
I hope she's not, doesn't die. That would be sad. Cool. LT.
The only other thing I had to say was the same thing I'd said earlier. I would be willing to bet good money that the Sarah bits were filmed way before the group shot scenes were.
Yeah, I would have to concur. All right, well, let's get into the next favorite topic, the kids show.
Yay!
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 World Beyond Season 2, Episode 6, titled, Who Are You?
Who? I really want to know. Sorry.
Written by Ben Sokolowski, directed by Heather Capiello. Description is, as a dangerous plan is put into motion, more revelations come to light. I'll let Brian take off with this because I wish I got to watch it more than just the once, and it was a distracted watch. So, like...
Well, it was a distracting episode. I mean, it was kind of, there were several things about it that were kind of left me perplexed. But one thing that I picked up on, of course, that, you know, we'd seen her show up right at the end of the last episode, Jadis, and I still have to say I hate her face and now those awful bangs that she has. Anyway, so she's calling herself.
It's kind of the Mo Howard haircut.
It is. So she's calling herself Jada Stokes. So she took Gabriel's last name, because, of course, Gabriel's last name was Stokes, or is. And if you recall that when she left The Walking Dead and, you know, went off in a helicopter with Rick, she was in a relationship with, Gabriel. So anyway, she took Gabriel's last name, and we know, and she mentions it later in the episode, that Jadis, was a made up name. So she was calling herself in that last season she was on, The Walking Dead season 9, she was calling herself Anne. So I'm wondering if her real name is in fact Anne, and you know, so anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Maybe that's her middle name.
Yeah, maybe, maybe, but yeah, we don't know.
I mean, I could see a good whipping name for Jadis Ann Stokes. Get in your room and clean up before supper.
Well, she mentioned specifically that Jadis was not her name. That well, she said right, that Jadis, you know, was not, you know, that was the name that she survived with. So that's the name she is, or something to that. Yeah.
But I'm just saying, Jadis Ann Stokes works.
Okay.
A whipping name.
I'm telling you.
If you say so.
Hey, that is a whipping name with the right cadence. And just for editorial content on that is, I don't know how it is in any other part of the world, but in the southern area that I live in, your whipping name is when your mother uses your full name.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And your full name to include trailers. So if you got, you know, Leroy Samuel Smith Jr., get in here right this minute. You knew what was coming next.
Yep. That's
your whipping name.
So, Jadis, she mentions that, you know, she described what she did, you know, on The Walking Dead was a form of theater, that in order to create a society, you need to create theater. So essentially her garbage dump people, was theater. So I was thinking about this, and I was, listened to a portion of another podcast, overnight, and, they mentioned a little bit about this, and I kind of took it a little further. So the whole thing about theater, we've seen a lot of theater, and I'm just going to rattle these off really quickly. So other examples of theater besides the garbage dump people in The Walking Dead, we saw some Woodbury theater in the Walker fights. That was kind of a thing. The Claimers, a little bit of theater with their claim. That's more of a ritual kind of thing. Of course, the Hunters had this whole elaborate thing that they would do to get their meat. You know, so they brought people into their, you know,
boxcars,
and you know, and brought them to be sliced and diced. The Wolves, of course, they obviously had their own kind of theater going on, which I don't think you need to really think about, but they had, you know, they had the W like carved on their foreheads, and, you know, they were all weird. The Saviors, of course, you know, Negan had his own kind of theater going on. He was kind of like a cult of personality. Yeah, the Kingdom, a rare good example of where theater was used in a like good kind of situation with the king and, you know, the court and all that stuff. You had the Whisperers, that was obviously theater. You had the Reapers in a way, that's theater. In a way, I guess that's the weakest form of theater. In Fear, you had the Boat Pirates. They had their own kind of theater. You had the Vineyard with, what's her name? Celia, and all that stuff going on. Then you had the La Colonia, where you had, the walkers, like in this, like, you know, death area. You had the Auto Ranch. That was also some theater with the whole, you know, prepper stuff. You had the Proctors, that was also theater. You had the Vultures, that was theater. Garbage Lady had her own theater going on. The Pioneers, you know, in Virginia, she had her theater going on. Teddy's people, obviously that was theater. Strand right now has theater going on himself. And possibly these Stalkers. We don't know enough about them right now, but that might be a form of theater. So anyway, we've seen this recurring and recurring and recurring throughout these three shows, this use of theater in creating these societies. So it was that. So they sent the empties to cover up from a chemical weapon attack against Omaha. Now I was wondering about this, like, didn't they go through Omaha on their way there, or was that after the fact? After the fact?
Yeah.
I don't know. No. You mean before Campus Colony?
I'm talking about when they left, that I recall, you know, they were leaving and then they had to go through something going on at Omaha. Was that after Omaha was already attacked or before, or what? What was?
I think they came through before.
Okay. Okay.
Because they were already on the road and gone whenever Campus Colony fell.
Mm. Okay. So what do you guys make of that? They sent the empties in to cover up from a chemical weapon attack against Omaha. So why would they use chemical weapons against Omaha?
That's the big question.
I think there could be two things going on. I think maybe it's to see if, you know, if they're using some type of nerve agent to see if it still works, that it was sort of like let's see if this is still potent enough, or check dispersal patterns or things of that nature. Or maybe it wasn't a cover up so much as they used the walkers as a delivery system.
Maybe.
I think there's still a couple of questions. I definitely agree with you that the walkers coming through the wall and killing everybody, or the walkers coming through the wall. I'm sort of not convinced that the walkers were the primary means of death.
No.
But they, like I said, they could have been the delivery system. That maybe this stuff they're putting on the walkers to make them decay faster, maybe there's a secondary chemical they put on it to, you know, kill the living.
I don't know. There,
it seems very like that's just a
it's more freaking questions to the questions we already had.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Brian's, this makes no sense, but this is like, this makes no sense to a factor of 10.
Wow. It makes no sense. And I always look at it from, like, I think of it in terms of, like, if I was writing this, how would I write this? And how would I write this better? And how, you know, why does this not make sense from a writing perspective? And, you know, I just, like, not knowing where the story's going at the end, it's difficult to know these things. But, like, I don't know. There's certain things that, you know, you may look at and you go, well, I'm thinking of something specific right now that I don't want to say what it is because it may be a spoiler to some. But
right.
Like, there's one very popular fantasy show, I'll just say, that ended a certain way that some people, myself included, didn't like. But I can't find any fault in the way it was written. Like, it's just that they made a plot. There was a plot decision in the story that I just didn't care for. Okay. That's not the same as, I don't understand this story. It makes no sense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's where I'm kind of like,
what I think we're going to do. What I'd like to do when this is all over is I would almost like to sit down in the last episode and say, what did we accomplish in the last episode? and then walk it backwards and decompose what they did and figure out, well, what would have made, you know, because at this point, I'm kind of like you. I don't know where we're going. I don't know why we're doing this. If it's a deliberate choice to get to an end, it's the end is not obvious, which may be a good thing, but it just seems like that we're making a lot of choices and they're throwing a lot of niblets out there for us to latch onto. And like you said, when I look at it as in the totality, I'm staring into the void and the void is staring back at me. I just don't get where we're going with this.
Yeah. Or it also feels like maybe that this is a one of those situations where, you know, they have the characters behaving a certain way, not because of this story, but because of the connection to the other stories. You know, it's so they've kind of sacrificed this show and, you know, the sense that it makes in order to connect things together. And, you know, it's like,
because that's the only thing that keeps popping in my mind is just like, well, how does this all relate to Rick and his whole situation? And even with what Jadis was saying in this episode, it was like, okay, so you did your thing all to get into the CRM's like good graces. So then, you know, then where's the connection now? Like, are they, you know, what was it about Rick that is so valuable to them? And what we're seeing is like, they're doing these things against other civilization, you know, like other places for what reason? You know, anyways, go on.
Yeah. I want to throw this out here just very briefly. And that's why I've always loved the story arc that they had in Babylon 5.
Yeah.
Because one thing I did when the series ended, I went back and watched season one. And every Easter egg that I saw laid in season one was paid off by season five. And what I'm seeing here is not anything that artful. And I really wish I could be more positive about it. But it's like you keep saying, they're doing stuff that I don't see makes any sense, and I don't know how they're going to suddenly give me an answer at the end of the line, and I'm going to do the head slap and go, oh, it makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we're at the point where, you know, we've got 4 episodes left, and, you know, and right now I haven't watched it yet, but the episode 7 is available for me to watch. So, you know, on AMC Plus, we're getting to a point. It's like, look, and so many people have said, you know, oh, you know, I'll give it benefit of the doubt because there's only 2 seasons. And it's like, no, again, get to the frickin' point. I don't know where this show's going. It doesn't make sense. I'm not connecting the dots to get from point A to point B. This is taking me somewhere off of point B. It's the best way I can put it. Anyway, we've got more to cover, and it's, you know, I want to get to my next point here. Okay. I just knew that Indira's son there, whose name is Dev, I had to look it up. And of course I think Dev developer. That's what I do, by the way, listeners. But I just knew he wasn't going to make it when they gave him lines.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, you're about to die. This is, you get lines. And they went a different way with, as LT likes to call her, Dr. Sandwich, than I thought. But I wonder if she could still be one of the bad guys. I don't really trust her. And I wonder if those experiments she did to her family kind of turned her into a bit of a mad scientist. So, like, I don't know. Like, maybe what we saw this week was to throw us off the scent and that she's actually kind of a bad person beyond, you know, what we've seen. Like, she actually is in cahoots. You know, we know that she knew about this, whatever this V thing is, because Leo remembers seeing her with those papers. So, you know, but I don't know. I don't know. Next point, and this would be in the weak sauce if we had weak sauce on here. Why do Huck and Felix just stand there by the freezer? And I would think, geez, you know, that's the perfect place to get discovered there. Go and vamoose, you know?
Yeah.
Leave the area. The one thing that really, really got me is, and this is again, you know, some of this whole 90210 freeform, you know, CW kind of stuff that we've talked about. And that is Iris. Like, she's basically willing to destroy everything, you know, like she wants to destroy the whole lab, which would set curing the zombie apocalypse and, you know, allowing humanity to continue, maybe destroy it forever. Who knows? Because of some of the things that they're doing, and I'm not condoning what they're doing, but be very careful in what you're going to do. Like, she's talking about basically destroying all the research, which if she destroys all the research, the humanity is never going to,
right.
Never going to, you know, recover from it. So like I just heard that. And I'm just thinking, look, you're looking at this with, 2021, research from, you know, the pandemic, say, based on, you're like comparing COVID to a zombie apocalypse, you know? And I think what would be acceptable in a zombie apocalypse might not be acceptable in COVID times, but it's not reverse. Like, it's not, you know, just because something is not acceptable in a COVID time, doesn't make it unacceptable in a zombie apocalypse time. If 99.9% of the human population is gone, you might want to do a few things you wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, it might be time for drastic measures.
Yeah, but that's just me.
Yeah, well,
and I had to steal it from you this week.
The sidebar, Brian, for me is, she's mad that the CRM is doing all this really extreme stuff that is cold and callous and calculating, but yet she is trying to almost do the same thing with her own justification.
Right.
You know, that's one of them things, man.
Yeah. That is the end of the comments that I had for this one. So.
Okay.
All right, LT.
Well, for mine, I was going Jadis going all secret police / you know, authoritarian. And, you know, she's making jokes about, you know, yep, I'm here to root out spies and corruption. You see any? Wink, wink. And it's the way she keeps joking with Huck that it's like, is she on to her? Is she not on to her? Because she keeps dropping hints, and I cannot think of her name, the actress, but the way that she's playing Jadis is she's playing it so stiff.
Pollyanna McIntosh.
Pollyanna McIntosh. She's playing that part so stiff and so strong in some ways, is that I don't know if she's joking or not. You know, I don't know if, you know, I don't know if she's on to Huck or not. I think she is, because that's one of my later points. But, you know, she's coming across full bore. I didn't want to use the G word in there, but I got to remember. She's, you know, coming across full bore KGB Stasi here. And I just, it's just kind of hard for me to deal with. Considering the last time we saw her, she was the screwed up trash hippie. And it's the fact that she's had such a radical 360-degree personality shift from the last time we saw her. And like you said with your theater thing, it kind of makes me wonder now, well, which was the role and which one's the real one? Is, you know, Miss Super Hard-Ass the role? Or was the waffly, take me back, I have a, you know, I have a B, I thought it was an A or whatever it was.
I tend to think that the, you know, she is, she's like different every single, you know, there is no single, Jadis, you know, there's, she's a chameleon.
Yeah. Well, and you can, the analogy that I would say is that you talk about people who do deep cover things and they can't really, you know, talk about quote unquote their real lives. But if you do something like that for long enough, then yeah, it gets kind of ambiguous. What is your real life? You know, are you really Armando the Coke smuggler? If that's what you do for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day, every day for years. And you're not, you know, Bob the farmer's son who got a job working for the, you know, the ATF or the DEA. So, but anyway, enough about Jadis for right now. And along the lines of the long conversation that Huck and Felix had in front of the freezer, is it just me or are there a notable lack of security guards in your super secret lockdown facility?
Yeah.
It just seems like for your super secret lockdown facility, there's no random security guards roaming the halls, making sure the doors are locked. There's not a janitor cleaning up after hours after all the lab techs have gone home. It just seems to be a notable lack of anybody. And not to say that my experience in government facilities is the do-all, be-all, end-all, but generally speaking, there's somebody in the building. And even if it's got super-duper state-of-the-art electronic, you know, security, they're still going to have some poor mook in a uniform with a flashlight walking around shining lights in windows. And just to say it again, the long lingering in the hallway after the lights came back on, because what was the whole push there? Oh, you've got to get out before the power comes back on.
Yeah.
Well, obviously that stopped being an imperative at some point. I want to just throw it in here. While it is good evidence, just a little operational note, Felix, if you're going to steal a bottle out of a tray of bottles in a cabinet with a glass front, don't take the one in front. Even though it offends my sensibilities of fronting shelves, it's the first one they're going to notice is gone. If you're going to steal something like that, steal it from the back. So maybe it will go longer before someone notices, because we know they're going to notice. That's sort of, I think, sort of one of those, oh, well, they've got to notice because that's going to drive the plot for the next thing. Whenever Huck walked into the room with Jadis and was getting ready to have her little tete-a-tete and her, you know, rum and reminiscence, was it just me, or was Jadis wearing one of the Sneaky Pete earpiece things that Huck and Felix were just using?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think so. So I think it's kind of safe to say that, you know, Huck's cover has been blown.
Yeah, that was kind of seemed to be pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. But.
And I think the last thing I'm going to go on about is Brian's already touched on it, but I'm just going to say it like this. Iris is killing me. She's killing me.
Yep.
Because I'm glad that suddenly now, you're all incensed and you're all angry and you're all on your big moral high horse, but you need to consider the tactical considerations of the situation that you find yourself in currently. You're not in a position to, you know, beat your chest and crawl up on top of the wagon and wave the red flag and start singing the song of angry teenagers.
Well, plus, like, you know, and how are a few people going to, you know, take down this facility and whatnot? And say, and what does that even mean? Like, what, you know,
at this point, would blowing up the secret research facility be as pointless as killing how many thousands of people in Omaha, Brian?
100,000.
And there you go. It's just her, like I said, just her having her Les Mis moment is just killing me. And the fact that she's going to be, like you said, she's going to be all indignant and going, this is wrong, and we've got to bring it down, and we've got to stop them, with no regard for the consequences, for no regard for the big picture stuff, for the fact that, what about the people that are just minding their own business at this facility, who aren't really doing anything nefarious or wrong? No, let's just go ahead and kill all the healthy human beings that have survived the apocalypse thus far because you've got a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah. And Hope, you know, has, I have to take Hope's side of it. You know, like she says, well, like some of these people, and I'd even go further to say most of these people aren't bad people. Like, you know, they're trying to do good. And if I'd even go further to say that, you know, it's probably not the scientists that she needs to, you know, have a beef with. It's the military, you know, it's yeah. Like, if anything,
I believe we are close to being on the same page.
I would say not close. We're probably right on the same page. So,
and I'll go back to my thing. I don't know how they're going to stick the landing on this one.
They will be lucky if the plane lands at all, I think.
You know how they can? They'll just announce season 3.
Oh, God. See, no.
They can't. No. See, because they can't do that, Kyle, because that would piss people off because they've already said final season.
Yeah.
No, what they would do is they would go next on AMC, The Walking Dead, you know.
They'll say,
Huck and Iris, strike it big.
Yeah. they'll say, there are some, you know, we'll continue this on the first, you know, episodes of the anthology series, or, you know, there'll be a three-parter on the anthology series or something like that. Or, yeah, there'll be a spinoff based on this. And it's like, no, please, no. You know?
Yeah.
Maybe they can make The Walking Dead animated series, you know, based on.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It'll be like the Star Trek Prodigy of The Walking Dead.
No, I'm thinking this would be more of the,
hey, look at that zombie.
Oh, I don't know. It might be dangerous. God.
Okay, well, let's move on.
Let's move on, feedback. Please.
All right. Well, go into our list. Or do you have anything else, LT? Is that it?
No, I think I've beat that horse as much as it needs to be beaten.
All right. Listeners' feedback. First one comes from Dieta from Detroit. And she says about World Beyond, she says, Iris is about to start a war. She don't care about nothing. Flat out, they killed all of her people back home, and she will get vengeance by any means necessary. She doesn't know why they did it and doesn't care why. She just knows they killed innocent people. Hope knows what they did, but now that she has spent 3 days at the other community and feels it's not so bad what they did because she has been told she can help solve the scientific mystery they are working on. I think that's what's going on. Shrug. Did Iris get the brother killed because Felix dude decided he was going to rescue him after reading Iris's letter instead of letting the plan play out? He tells the brother, I think, to take him to the CRM so he can sneak in. Facepalm. Jadis, wow. She has really come up in the world. Slapping face. Plot twist, Rick is part of the CRM and is running his own community. He has amnesia, so he doesn't remember his daughter or the people he used to be with. That's why he never came back. He doesn't know about little RJ because he left before he was born. Anywho, come on with the answers already. Tired of waiting. Thanks, Dieta. I don't think Rick. I don't know. Do you think that's too crazy,
well,
Brian?
I mean, if we're going to go there, what if Rick is Major General Beale? No, that's too crazy.
We'd have to have the reveal where he's in the chair and do the slow turnaround.
Yeah. I need to wear have mustache twirling kind of thing.
No, you'd need a scar.
A good scar.
Because yes. It's not like he can have a beard because he already had a beard.
So. Right.
All righty. What's next?
All right. That would be Glenn's from Toronto. Glenn's from Toronto gives World Beyond a 6 out of 10 short circuit. Right. So, Jadis, you wheedled your way back up the ladder in the CRM because of you providing something very valuable. Read Rick Grimes. You lost your community by trusting the wrong people. In other words, Negan and company, but you seem more like a robot now than when you met Rick Grimes, and CRM is worse than what the saviors were. You sold out Rick Grimes. So the Anne character that Jadis became in The Walking Dead is long gone, or is Jadis just a front and Anne is trying to infiltrate the CRM? With even a more dreadful haircut than she had at the garbage dump in The Walking Dead with your scavengers. Huck is going to have to watch her back with Jadis around. Their introductions were downright creepy. Did those two have an intimate relationship before by any chance? Does that vial Felix have contain the cure or yet another biological weapon in the Walking Dead universe? And those multiple cylinders filled with chemicals or combustibles. Iris's plan to blow the place up isn't lacking lighting materials and wicks. And she says, ... And an awkward dinner with Iris now speaking her mind and confronting Indira, her dad's beau. Is Indira going to die soon since she told Leopold about her husband and daughter's deaths and sort of wrapped up her purpose of why she's testing subjects, even her own family members, to restore them somehow to their former selves. So that is where she was when talking, dictating about her A test subjects in Lab C. Now, where are those Bs kept?
Yes, questions, more questions, all lots of questions. All right. Well, thank you, Glynis. And our last listener feedback comes from Renee from Atlanta. And she says, throw the whole show away. Shrug. That damn Jadis is a regular old person. Wow. She did say she created a new language for her people, and she definitely played it to her advantage because I thought she was a little touched by but I see now she was just acting. She wanted Rick for real when she said, we sleep together. laughing face. And Rick Michonne looked at her like, seriously, lady? I can't with this show. It had great potential as well. Please, Rick, hurry up and show your face because I can't take much more. It's like Game of Thrones. It's making me sad that they took a great series and turned it into mush. Love you guys. Keep up the great work with what. Love you guys. Keep up the great with what you have to work with. Maybe you can make me see this episode in a different light. Oh, I don't think so, Renee. Sorry.
I doubt it.
Maybe.
I don't think we can make ourselves see it in a different light. I mean, I don't know. It's not all horrible, but there's so much that is horrible. And then when you wrap around, I don't know. It's like you were saying, LT, there's something about the Iris character that just like, I just can't do it. You know, I don't stand for what she stands for. I don't stand for who she is. I don't stand for what she is. I just think that she is too much of a, she's not a realist in a time when, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
It just,
she's acting immature and acting more like what we would see. That's how I feel. Is like she's acting like the popular girl who's running for student body president and then is not getting her way. Like, you know, she's acting like
a person that's starving that, you know, given the chance, but I'm starving, but you know, I'm not going to eat meat. You know, it's like, if you don't eat meat, you're going to die. Well, I can't eat meat. It's against my, you know, whatever.
Right. So, no,
that's essentially, it's like, well, if you don't eat, if you choose to continue to be a vegetarian, you're going to die. That's what it tells like me. And maybe my analogy isn't working quite right, but essentially what I'm saying is you have a chance to eat and eat well, but instead you choose not to eat the things that you could eat to keep you going, and instead you die. Well, whose fault is that? Is it the fault of you for not eating what you could have, or is the fault of, you know, the people that give you the food? Well, I hate to say it, but it's the fault of you, because you wouldn't eat the food that would have kept you alive. So that's kind of my point. And that's kind of the point of her. She has morals that don't fit the situation.
Right. She's standing up to her principles, but the principles aren't really fitting to what they should be. Like, that's
right. Because there's a point that I'm seeing, that it's one thing to stand for your principles. It's one thing for you to stand by what you believe in. But there's always going to be that point where, are you going to, just because you make a small compromise does not mean that you are totally becoming a libertine and abandoning what you believe in.
Right.
But if you're so hidebound that you won't compromise at all, then you're going to end up causing way more problems than, you know, it's that whole rigidity of thought that everything is black, everything is white.
Right.
Instead of everything is shades of gray.
Right.
Right. And she's going to learn the hard way when she does something bad.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think we're going to end up that, I'm just afraid that it's going to end up that she's going to burn the whole damn thing down, and then everybody will end up, you know, living under a tarp somewhere in the middle of nowhere, eating roadkill possums.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at it like, you know.
Yeah. All righty.
It's kind of like, and I know we haven't played it for a while, but you know, it's like you could have solved the apocalypse once and for all, and you blew it. I need that sound effect, but anyway, let's move on.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, let's go into news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Well, ratings are down. The way we're talking about it, I guess that makes sense, doesn't it? Fear got a 0.15 in the 18 to 49 with 733,000 viewers. That's down from last week's 0.18 and 871,000 viewers. In the 25 to 54, it was quite a bit down. It got a 0.19 versus last week's 0.27. And it was down with 0.45 in the 50 and over versus last week's 0.53. Yeah. So Walking Dead World Beyond got for season 2, episode 6. It got a 0.10 in the 1849 with 431,000 viewers. That's down quite a bit in the total viewers in the 1849, up very, very, very slightly with a 0.09 last week, but it had 510,000 viewers. So again, quite a bit down. And as you can see in the graphs and the charts for this week, things are going in a downwards spiral. So Parrots this week, well, of course we don't see Fear, but we see The Walking Dead. It was up actually from number 7 last week to number 5 this week. It rated a 40.9 times the demand of an average show versus 40.7 times last week. So not a big number change, but it went up in position. And I'm guessing it went up in position because of Jadis, because these numbers are usually like trailing by a week. So I'm thinking it's because of Jadis showing up, and that, you know, brought up some chitter chatter about that. And of course, you know, Jadis was a character that was originally on The Walking Dead. So hence that. Anyway, that's it for ratings and news. Finally, we got something through something quickly. It's a long episode this time.
Yep. All right, LT, you want to tell people how to interact with us?
I do. We want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That's at WalkingDeadTTM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/walkingdeadttm. You can send us email. That's walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. You can also use our feedback forum. That's on our webpage at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. You can leave us a voicemail. Just call area code 216-232-6146. Just remember that voicemails are capped at 3 minutes. All of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to subscribe and click that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Those videos go out first before the podcast does.
All right. To support us, like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. The best way you can support us is in our Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. And we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCall, Renee Murray, the guy over there, LT, me, and Dieta Patterson. Remember, Dieta, Clint, and Renee will be getting an early version of the episode this week. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast client of choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com. And actually there, you can rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. You'll find a link to Podchaser on each episode post. And always remember to share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them, or tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to get us new listeners. All right, where else can we be listened to, Brian?
Oh, right now, nowhere, but coming up pretty soon, we have the Star Trek Discovery podcast coming back next week. Discovery returns, and Ruthie and I will be covering that. The Star Trek Prodigy podcast, which is Star Trek Prodigy by Rebinge It, that's going on right now, covering Star Trek Prodigy. That is actually going to go on hiatus as of next week. So that'll be going on, and Discovery will be taking over for the rest of the winter, I guess, or fall, whatever. That was very clumsy. But yes, Star Trek Prodigy is coming now. I'm not on that one, but I am on Star Trek Discovery. So that will be starting next week.
Soon, yes. All right. All right. Our next episode is Fear the Walking Dead, Season 7, Episode 5, titled Till Death, written by Justin Boyd and Ashley Cardiff, directed by Lenny James. So this should be interesting. Description is, with a code to guide them, Dwight and Sherry become ethical outlaws known as the Dark Horses. When Strand recruits them for a search and rescue mission, it forces them to question their code and their future. And World Beyond Season 2, Episode 7, titled Blood and Lives, written by Sinead Daly and directed by Lily Myra. Description, as the group searches for answers, some struggle to find common ground while others question who can be trusted. A shocking message sets a new mission in motion.
And I am starting to wonder if Kublek was recalled to go, you know, back and, you know, this Major General Beale we keep hearing about is because he's planning a military coup, you know? So
that's kind of makes sense for something like that to happen.
Yeah.
Could be.
All right. So until next time, I'm Kyle.
I'm Brian.
And I'm LT.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.